Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio. I'm Darren Hefty.
And I'm Brian Hefty. Thanks for joining us today. It's a Farmer Friday. If you'd like to call into the show, our phone lines will be open all throughout the show today. 844-44-AG-PHD. That's 844-442-4743. You can email us, radio@agphd.com, or send us a note on Twitter, AgPhD Media, Darren Hefty, or Brian Hefty. We are live in the Morton studio today, again, on a Farmer Friday. It doesn't seem like Friday to me with all these holidays and everything. Feels about like a Tuesday, but anyway, it is Friday, and we are into the new year, into 2020. So what are you going to change on your farm agronomically in 2020 to improve yields, to improve profits, to improve the soil? What are you doing? I just sent something out to a bunch of agronomists who do training with, and I brought up a farmer who we were talking to the other day who was having Flexstar carryover, and he had a couple of mistakes, and I'm laughing about this now because it's just it's just an unfortunate deal that there are a lot of bad recommendations that get made all the time out there by agronomists, which is why we do so much training with agronomists around the United States and even in Canada, and why we do Ag PhD, to put out good agronomy information so you make the right decisions for your farm. So anyway, here's what happened. The farmer had been using Flexstar at too high a rate. Now, granted, it was a labeled rate, but in the position he was in, where he was farming and everything, it's not a rate that we would recommend. And so he was ending up with carryover in his corn. Well, that's easy to solve. Just quit using such a high rate. But the next thing is, he didn't realize if you use Flexstar 2 years in a row, you're stuck to plant soybeans the third year. You can't use Flexstar 2 years in a row and then rotate back to corn. Can't do it. It's off label. And it most of the time actually does hurt the corn. So we can't take those kind of chances. And it's one of the things where if you're not 100% positive that your agronomist is making the right recommendations, ask around a little bit. There are plenty of good agronomists out there. There's plenty of good agronomic knowledge out there. Certainly you can read what the label says. But just like in this case, the guy was following the label, but he was still having a problem. So you've got to know just a little bit more than what that label is going to tell you. Just as an example, he also was thinking, well, I had all kinds of rain, so I shouldn't have any carryover problem this year. And I said, well, no, actually, you should have more. He's like, what, more? Why would I have more? I said, because all the bacteria that would break that herbicide down died in your flooding. And he goes, what? I thought it would, you know, just disappear, the product disappear. I said, no, that product doesn't leach. Now, if it was atrazine or something that does move down in the soil with water, then that's a different deal, okay? But we're not leaching a lot of these herbicides away. They're staying where they're put, which is a good thing, in my opinion. But if you're going to break them down with bacteria like you normally would, then you got to think about, when do bacteria do well? Well, they do well in relatively neutral soil pHs, when they have plenty of oxygen, when they have plenty of heat. They have to have a little bit of moisture, but they don't need too much. And, you know, one of the other things that I brought up is, how about salt? Do you have a lot of manure or compost applied? If your salt levels are extreme, then the bacteria aren't going to do well, and you're going to see more carryover problems there too. So these are all things to be thinking about. And I just kind of go back to when Darren and I were young agronomists, and our dad talked to us a lot about, you know, how to be good agronomists, because he was a farmer his whole life, and he was an agronomist then too. And he just said, look, whatever you do in terms of recommendations, the most important thing is that you don't hurt somebody's crop, whether it's hurting it this year or carry over for next year. He said, if you miss a few weeds out there with a recommendation, it's not the end of the world. But man, when you hurt a crop, now it could be thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars of loss for a farmer. So that's why when you hear us talking about agronomic recommendations every day here on the show, we're going to be more conservative with a lot of these products that could potentially injure your crop either this year, next year, or at some point in the future.
Yeah, we always want to be cautious about that. And it's been interesting though too, Brian. This year is going to provide some extra challenges. I've talked to a number of farmers that are changing up the rotations. Maybe it's because of how 2019 played out. And also it could be because of they're looking at market opportunities.
Why do you say it's going to present extra challenges this year?
Well, just because it isn't as simple as, well, I was corn and then it was soybeans. Like you were talking about using 2 years of FlexStar in a row and that's a bad idea.
Oh, you're saying just because last year's rotations got screwed up.
Yeah, I'm saying in 2019 guys got screwed up and now here we are going into 2020 and that's going to cause some problems. The other thing is there are just simply some farmers I've talked to this year that said, you know what? I'm going to raise some more corn or I'm going to raise some more soybeans because of local demand things and just what's going on in their areas. I've heard more talk about corn than I have about any other crop, but certainly there are going to be some other crops as you travel around the continent looking at certain areas that, well, hey, I can make more money on canola over here. I can make more money on wheat over there.
Yeah, and where I was going with this when you said challenges this year, I was hoping you weren't thinking, well, it's because it's wet. We don't know what it's going to be like in the spring. It
it's
may
too
be
far
wet
away.
Now.
Yeah, too far
right.
away.
So here's another thing that our dad always used to talk to us about. He goes, boys, I hope it's wet in the fall because then I'm already halfway home to high yields the next year. He said our biggest limiting factor a lot of times in South Dakota is too little rain. So we need subsoil moisture going into the season. He said when we don't have subsoil moisture going into the season, a lot of times that's where we end up in trouble and a lot of times that's where we end up with inferior yields. So yes, every once in a while, once in a generation, you're going to have a year like we did this past year where there were a whole bunch of prevent plant acres. But more often than not, having moisture in that subsoil going into a year is a good thing.
Well, it's going to be fun just to hear from our listeners today. If you're interested in talking about this topic or have an agronomic comment or question, it's Farmer Friday, so we're taking your calls and questions all throughout the show. Our phone lines will be open at 844-44-AG-PHD. You can also send us an email, radio@agphd.com, especially if you've got a big, complex topic like a soil test you want to discuss or you're looking for advice on a lime source or something like that. We get a lot of those in. You may laugh, but we actually get a lot of those in on a weekly basis. Radio@agphd.com is the best place to send those. And of course, you can find us on Twitter, AgPhD Media, Brian Hefty or Darren Hefty. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Find your full potential and increase your bottom line with branded generic pesticides from Atticus LLC. Atticus offers a vast portfolio of branded generic fungicides, herbicides, and insecticides for row crops. Atticus puts grassroots experience and common sense logic to work to make product selection easier and on your terms. Growers across the region count on Atticus for relevant and reliable products that deliver results every time. Ask your local retailer about Atticus products and visit AtticusLLC.com to learn more. For value-based solutions you can trust, turn to Atticus. Always read and follow label instructions.
When it comes to my weed control, I know a head start can go a long way. That's why I spray early, so I can keep control all season long with a Roundup Ready Extend crop system, the system that makes the difference. This is my field.
Choose the Roundup Ready Extend crop system for control of more weeds than any other soybean system. Featuring Extendamax herbicide with vapor grip technology to manage tough-to-control weeds, including up to 14 days of soil activity, along with the field-proven performance of Roundup Ready to Extend soybeans. Now you have the right tools to extend your weed control and extend your yield with the system that makes the difference. Learn how you can put the system to work in your field when you visit RoundupReadyExtend.com. Extendamax is a restricted-use pesticide. Performance may vary. Always read and follow grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions. Check local regulations for specific requirements in your state.
Want to cut production costs without losing yield? Brian Ryberg from Buffalo Lake, Minnesota has done just that. Here's his story.
We began using a soil warrior on our farm the fall of 2014. We've seen many benefits from better water infiltration, a lot less hours on equipment, fuel, able to reduce our fertilizer side, so it's really simplified our operation.
See what makes Soil Warrior different and better at SoilWarrior.com.
It's Farmer Friday on Ag PhD Radio. We're taking your calls and questions throughout the show today at 844 44 AG PhD. And our first caller is brave. We got JR down in Nebraska. He wants to talk drain tile. JR, I'm concerned about this. You may only get a few words in and Brian might take over the whole rest of the show.
It is a pretty big deal for you guys, that I understand, so that's why I wanted to talk to you guys.
All right. Go ahead, JR. What's your situation? What's going on?
Well, so we've got some farmland that we've owned for several years, probably over 100 years, whatever it's been. And so we've got it rented out for a family that's been doing it for many, many years also. And they're asking about putting in some drain tile. And he had presented a thing to us showing field maps of production and how the crop was benefiting in areas that were draining better than others. And so he was questioning on what we should do or what we could do in these areas. And of course it all takes money, so we're trying to figure out what is best for the farm itself and for the owners and the renters.
Yep, we've gone through all this too, JR. I've worked with all of our landlords on this over the last really 15 years, and the two, in my opinion, the two best ways to do this are typically, one, the owner of the ground pays for 100% of the tile, and then you just go up in cash rent to cover that. So if you say, and it all depends on your financial situation. So we've had some landlords that have all kinds of cash sitting in the bank. And I just said, hey, instead of having that sitting in the bank at 1%, I'll give you more cash rent every year to equate to a much higher interest rate on that. Plus then the value of your land goes up. Because like around here,
taxes on that money.
Yep, that's right. And you do get some break on depreciation and everything for that tile. So yes, there are some financial benefits there. But around here anyway, if you go to any land sale in my region, if there is tile in that field, the auctioneer will bring up the tile about 50 times during the course of the sale to try to drive the price up, and it always does drive the price up. Okay, so that's one way to handle it. The other way to handle it is the owner of the ground pays for nothing and the renter pays for everything, and then you just agree on a fixed rent lease for a longer period of time. So it might be yes. So that way the renter knows, hey, I've got whatever 10 years to get this paid off, and in that time, you know, my rent remains fixed or whatever. So those are the two most popular ways that it works out. But as an owner of a lot of ground myself, I will just tell you, putting drain tile in the ground, oh man, it's tremendous. It helps that soil health so much, and so your ground is worth more. And that's too why, if you are the owner of the ground and you do decide to spend the money on the tile yourself, you go, hey, I'm entitled to a little more because now my ground is more productive. So you are going to get more, or you should be able to get more cash rent. So, I mean, it should work out one way or the other.
I feel we're commanding a pretty good commission on the property already. So I don't know how much room there is. How much would typically that raise the value of that land, would you think?
Well, it depends on the area that you're from, but I'll just give you an example. We have a lot of people we work with in southeast Minnesota, for example, where if they have a quarter of land that isn't tiled and they go to the banker and the banker says, yep, I'll loan you whatever, $50,000 to put tile in, the banker typically immediately puts $50,000 on the value of the land. So it goes up based on whatever amount that got put in. And yeah, as far as how much more rent do you charge? I mean, obviously that's between you and the renter, and it's whatever you want to do. But I just, like I was saying,
what do you see?
Yep, like I was saying, you know, if a lot of people have their money in at 1%, they're getting, call it 3% more. So if let's say you invested $100 an acre, then that's three more dollars. Maybe it's five more dollars is 5%, you know, so something like that.
3 to 5% increase would not be out of the question.
Absolutely not.
Okay. And that's kind of what I was figuring, because I think well, there's multiple owners of this property that we inherited. And so we're trying to, you know, he's got to sell it to all of us. And I'm the only one who kind of keeps up on this kind of stuff, because I enjoy listening to your guys' show and watching the program. And I gain quite a bit from it. from afar, because I'm not a farmer myself, but like I said, I do have a vested interest. So so let me take a second to thank you guys for all you put out there, for your hard work. So that's great.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks. And I will say, too, especially when you have multiple landowners, and once those people, I hate to even say this, but get some age on them, and they may not have been in it for a long time, they might not know what exactly is going on and how things have changed. Because like in my state of South Dakota, there was not a lot of tile put in 40, 50 years ago. But today, well, I mean, if you don't have it, it's a big deal. Yeah.
Well, it was a lot harder back then. We did have some old clay tile put in. I don't know when, but it's been quite a while, and some of it's failed. And then, so that was another question I have, is what's the life expectancy of the tile that people put in these days? How long will that benefit this land? It can't last forever, I trust.
No, I mean, nothing is going to last forever. But if it's done right, it really should last 50-plus years.
Yeah, so it's a pretty good investment. I mean, turn around, you make your money back short order.
That's
as
right.
far as the cost of it.
Yep, that's right.
And that's our big selling point for him. So he brought it up to us, and I suggested, I've heard you guys talk about splitting the cost of it, and then maybe increasing the rent after that's been paid down. Does that sound like something
that's
fair to offer?
Yes, that's another way that it can be approached. I usually take the all or nothing method, but yeah, if you want to work something out, I had one landlord that we did this where we worked something out in between, but you really kind of have to trust both sides is kind of the way I look at that. But yeah, I mean, lots of ways to do it.
I think that we've worked together long enough that it's doable for our situation, fortunately.
Sure.
And he only goes in 3-year contracts so far that I know of. So,
sure.
Yep. So there is some adjustability in the near future, whenever that comes up again.
All right. Well, hey, good luck, JR, and thanks for calling in today.
Absolutely. Appreciate your time, guys.
You bet. Thanks.
Let's head out to Pennsylvania. We got David with us right now. David, thanks for joining us.
Hey, no problem, Darren. How are you doing today?
Good, good. So what's happening out in Pennsylvania?
Oh, nothing. It's really warm here today and humid. It's actually like 62 degrees. It's like unseasonably warm. It's like bad.
Wow.
I don't like it. We're usually in the low 30s at this time of year there, and we have a dairy, and we're struggling with just a few cases of respiratory issues on calves and stuff. But other than that, it's pretty good. It's better than last year, I guess. We had a lot of water, and the harvest is done last year. We finished in January, so got to count our blessings that way, I suppose. But,
hey, this brings up a good point, David. I'm glad you brought that up. So I get a lot of questions from non-farmers about livestock and cold weather in the winter. And obviously we're dealing with some pretty large animals out there, and they can handle the cold. But what do you really like to see for temperatures this time of year? And then I would assume stability is probably the biggest thing, that things just stay the same.
Yeah, stability is our big issue with the cattle. You know, the mature cows and stuff and heifers are not a problem. It's these 2-week-old calves and stuff. Dairy calves don't tend to have the, as we talk in crops, the hybrid vigor. You know, they don't have the vigor that beef cows do. So, that's why, a lot of heterosis crossing has been going on with different breeds from Europe and stuff. Some of these guys are breeding it in for better health traits, and stuff. But the consistency in the weather is the key. Like, if it was going to stay 50, 60 degrees from now until April, hey, super. Everybody would adjust, But we get these nights where we're getting, 27, 25 degrees, and then during the day it's 40. It's too much of a fluctuation. And they just, it's an acute case. It's nothing serious, but it just creates more management, extra management steps that need to be taken, in certain times of the year. A lot of guys, around here, there's not a lot of dairies in our area. We're one of the largest ones at 200 cows. There's another guy milking 300 cows in our county, but they tend to like to get these calving, like when they're calving most of their heifers and stuff, kind of more towards like what some beef operations would do in the spring, so they don't have this inclement weather to work with. December through March around here is iffy. If it would stay in the 20s, that would be good too, but it doesn't seem to happen anymore for us around here.
Yeah, I remember growing up, we had a cow-calf operation and a farrow-to-finish hog operation, and I'd echo so many of those thoughts. If it was just stable and we didn't have the fluctuations, real high and low temperatures, the animals kind of got used to whatever normal became. Hey, David, thank you so much. Really appreciate you calling in. Really appreciate hearing about how things are going there, and Happy New Year to you.
No problem. No problem. Thank you, Darren. You guys have a good day. I enjoy your show. I watch you guys on YouTube all the time. It's great.
Awesome. Thank you very much. Really appreciate that. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Hey, Bill, any advice to control tough weeds and rootworms?
That's easy, Jim. Buy two, save three.
Wait, for weeds and rootworms?
Buy two, save three. Combine your Impact or new Impact Z herbicide purchase with a qualifying insecticide and save $3 per acre.
Buy two, save three. That is good advice.
For details, go to buy2save3.com. Impact, Impact Z, and Buy 2 Save 3 are trademarks owned by Amvac Chemical Corporation. All rights reserved. Impact Z is a restricted-use pesticide. Always read and follow label instructions.
How do you know when to run your grain bin fans? There's an app for that. With the Steps GMS app, you can manually turn your fans on and off from your smartphone. You can also configure the Steps GMS app to automatically turn fans on when the humidity or temperature is ideal to keep your grain in top quality condition. Save yourself some time and take the guesswork out of managing your stored grain with the Steps GMS app. Contact us at stepsgms.com for more information.
As your corn crop grows and the ear begins to form, potassium is at a high demand, almost as high as nitrogen. The same is true for soybeans, with similar high demands of potassium during pod fill. Don't fall behind. Ensure your crop is getting its potassium with Catalyst. Catalyst by Actagrow has been shown to be the best at entering the leaf when compared to other leading potassium products. Visit k-supercharged.com for more information.
If you're a rancher who's obsessed with keeping your pastures clear, turn to Grazon Next Herbicide. It offers superior broadleaf weed control, so instead of thinking about weeds, you can think about the money you'll save growing more grass and buying less feed. Used early in the season, Grazon Next also provides residual activity that controls newly emerged weed seedlings, giving you season-long control. Start enhancing your land while you protect it. Visit leavetheweedstous.com to learn more about Grazon Next. Always read and follow label directions.
We know balanced crop nutrition pays. AgriLiquid has the research, technology, and products you need to grow a great crop. Plus, the expertise to give you a recommendation based on your soils, your fields, and your goals. AgriLiquid has the phosphorus, potassium, and micronutrient products necessary to deliver the best results from a solid fertility program. Visit agriliquid.com to find a dealer near you.
In order to be the best farmer you can be, you've got to have a grain marketing plan. But what do you do when you're too busy out in the fields trying to maximize yield? Hi, I'm Darren Hefty. My brother Brian and I are always busy learning more about how to make our farm more successful. That's why we use Grain PhD to learn more about grain marketing and to work with our Grain PhD risk expert to create a complete grain marketing strategy. Visit grainphd.com to learn more about a free consultation for your operation. Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. It's Farmer Friday. That means we're taking your calls and questions throughout the show at 844-44-AG-PHD. Let's head back to those phone lines. We got Alan with us right now in Wisconsin. Alan, I know Wisconsin was awfully wet. How did you turn out this year?
Well, we were wet, but I still ran my irrigation systems a fair amount.
Really? That is interesting. So is it more for putting out like fertigation, or did you need the water at times?
Well, I'm pretty proactive irrigating. So whenever my soil moisture in the surface is starting to go down, then I'll add a slight amount of water because I only have the capacity for about one half of the amount of loss. So I can't wait until I'm in trouble because I'll never catch up.
Yeah, that's a great way to look at things. You just got to be right after it. And I think about a lot of no-tillers in our state. They talk about liming and they say, boy, if we see that pH starting to drop, we got to be out there way quicker than the conventional till guy because it's just going to take a little time for that lime to move down through the soil. So I think that's great. So looking at the crops this year, what turned out well for you?
I'm growing processing vegetables, and then I had just a little bit of field corn on shares, and so our field corn on just a small acreage was 247 dry.
Wow.
So I think we had a pretty good that way.
That's awesome. Okay, so how about the vegetables? How does that get paid for? Is it by the ton, or what are they looking for?
It's usually a weight, and it can be a graded weight. Each crop is a little different. Sweet corn's pure weight. The green bean contract that I was working under is pure weight, but it's a graded weight so that it depends on the size of the bean to what they pay you. My Lima beans were on I would have tear included, a graded shear press weight. So the processor has the ability to create a contract to their desire.
We get a lot of questions about these canning crops and how to get into that business. Is this something where they work with the same growers just year over year? So you're doing this for many years?
Yes, I've been doing it for decades, and all they want is a given amount of product, and they want to have a predictable person to work with, because you have to work closely with them, and they also, then they know my facilities, and you have to be in the right location. Just because you've got a desire to do it, that doesn't mean anything, and once you're established and you want to work with them, they would prefer to keep doing this business with a known rather than an unknown.
Sure. Yeah, I can see that'd be really important considering how fussy they have to be about those crops. How about diseases? I know tar spot has come into the southern part of Wisconsin. Has that impacted the sweet corn production at all?
Not that we know of. No, my processors are pretty proactive, and because I'm irrigating and I'm creating a more favorable environment for many of the diseases, they will simply, on my production at least, they under the systems, they will target one or two applications of fungicides just right off the bat. So I don't think my sweet corn average yield this year for 2019 was the same as it was for 2017 and 2018.
Huh, interesting. Yeah, it's kind of neat when you get into some of these different crops and just the unique opportunities they present. You mentioned lima beans and green beans and sweet corn. Man, I love eating those things, and I know somebody's producing them, and I'm glad, like you said, Alan, we get somebody that's doing this for a long period of time, that's really fussy about production, working closely with those canners to bring high-quality food, not only to us folks in the United States, but all around the world. Thank you for what you do, Alan. Really appreciate it, and thanks for sharing a little bit about that on the show today.
Why, certainly, and nice to visit with you.
You bet. We'll have to talk again sometime. Thanks, Alan. Let's head up to Michigan right now. We've got Gordon on with us right now, and Gordon, we brought up tar spot, and I know that's probably a sore subject in the state of Michigan, too.
It was, definitely. We had it again this year, so just kind of wondering if you guys have seen any research results as to what some fungicides we should consider, and timing too. I'm wondering about when is the best timing to try and deal with that.
You know, it's interesting. Okay, now Alan is just on here in Wisconsin, and Alan said he knows he's adding to his risk by irrigating, that he's creating that environment. Are you in dryland production, Gordon, or are you doing any irrigation?
We have some of both also. One of the other things that may contribute to it being more of a problem for us is we're in 15-inch row corn.
Okay.
So we have more canopy, and where I'm located in Michigan, we have a lot of heavy dews. Quite often, dews aren't gone till noon or 1 o'clock. So it's just it's kind of a damp situation we have here.
Yeah. It, you're right. You've got a lot of challenges there. And then, of course, we had this cloudy year in 2019 that added to some risk too, when we just didn't have the sunshine. And like you say, the dew held on even longer. I know on our farm, I would say the same thing. We had dews that that held on quite a bit longer than what we were used to. I'll say this, and maybe I'll let Brian jump in here too on tar spot, but when we look at some of the research that's been done on hybrid selection, and one of the things that the seed corn industry has really been looking at is let's evaluate what we've got, find out which inbreds and which parents have got some native tolerance to this, because that's been one of our best weapons against a lot of different diseases out there. And sure enough, there are some hybrids that are significantly better than others. And unfortunately, some of the most popular sellers for some of the real big seed companies have been pretty susceptible to tar spot. So I know we're quickly making those changes. Are you noticing that with your seed providers, Gordon, that they're already talking about, hey, here's some hybrids that might be a little better than others?
I know they're working towards that, Wade, Darren. I know last year they said it was such a new disease, so seemingly anyways, that they didn't feel they had a handle on which ones might be more tolerant to it than others. But I'm sensing this year they are a little bit more confident that they can recommend varieties that should give us a little more tolerance to tar spot. But yet, you know, it's like so often, there's no one variety that's just going to be completely tolerant or resistant to it. So, so we're kind of looking to maybe be a little bit more proactive this coming year in dealing with it. I know one fungicide I'd heard about, I'm probably not going to pronounce it correctly, was Veltima.
Like, yep, Veltima is the new one. And, you know, one of the good things here, Gordon, is when you have a year like last year where disease pressure is really high, well, obviously for all the seed corn breeders, they get the opportunity to look at their varieties in pretty bad situations. So, yeah, there are some fungicides you can use. Dolaro had been the only product labeled. That's from Bayer. BSF has Veltima. That's their new one that they think is just fantastic. And I would say the trial results look pretty decent last year. And then Syngenta has Trivapro. So there are a number of different options there for you.
What do you think the timing should be on that?
I would say probably R1. So we're talking silking, and then you can spray, let's call it 3 weeks after that. So a lot of people talked about how diseases seem to show up later than normal this year because it stayed so wet very, very late into the season in a lot of areas. What I always talk to people about is, you know, the disease might have shown up on your radar very late, but chances are it got into the plant much earlier than that. So my point is, if you said, well, boy, it didn't show up until 3 weeks after tasseling last year, so I'm just going to wait, I don't usually advise that, because for most of those diseases, they're going to get in a little bit earlier. So I'd much rather have you err on the early side than on the late side. If you want to spray a second time, you certainly can. There have been some people that do that, especially in higher yielding situations or in really wet years like last year.
Hey, Gordon, did you have some fertility questions you wanted us to get to as well?
Yeah, that's right. Zinc,
hey, Gordon, let me jump into that here in just a second. We've got a break coming up. If you hold with us through this break, we'll get to your fertility questions right after this. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. We're taking your calls and questions at 844-44-AG-PHD. We'll be right back.
We started utilizing the Dual React system this year. You can adjust your speed and it automatically adjusts your sprayer tips. So you can slow down and you aren't building up huge droplets, or you can speed up and you're not throwing a mist that's drifting.
Hypro, helping you spray better.
How much yield did you lose the moment you planted your seed? Introducing the Germinator Closing Wheel from Farm Shop MFG. Designed and built by a farmer tired of seeing yield loss from poor stands, the Germinator gives your crop the strong start it needs for maximum yield. Visit farmshopmfg.com.
White mold, sudden death syndrome, root rot. If you raise soybeans, it may seem like you have all the cards stacked against you when it comes to disease. But did you know there is a new cost-effective seed treatment which can help prevent all three? Heads Up Seed Treatment offers a new proactive approach for dealing with fungal and bacterial diseases. Compatible with other seed treatments, hedge your bet against disease this spring. Ask your dealer for Heads Up today. To locate a dealer, visit headsupst.com.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, marestail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall. Get a clean start for your next season with Valor Herbicide Brands. Always read and follow label directions.
Revitec Fungicide from BASF has been specifically developed for the selective soybean grower who doesn't compromise. If you think good is good enough, if you're okay with just achieving rather than overachieving, if average is your goal, this is not the fungicide for you. Revitec Fungicide, brand new chemistry, 3 no-excuse modes of action, 0 modes of compromise. Sounds like the fungicide for you. Revitec Fungicide from BASF, that's smart. Always read and follow label directions.
Bean growers continue to see yield loss from white mold across the Midwest this season. To maximize next year's crop, a white mold prevention strategy that includes Contans WG Soil Fungicide is a must for your farming operation. Applying Contans this fall to reduce the sclerotia in the soil is the most effective way to stop white mold at its source. Start a Contans white mold control strategy this fall or pay for it later in lost yield.
You know a healthy crop is required for your best results. Simply put, balanced crop nutrition pays. AgriLiquid fertilizers have the research, technology, and products to deliver those results. We also have an outstanding team of field agronomists ready to help you with your fertility decisions. AgriLiquid can help you maximize your yield potential effectively and economically. Visit agriliquid.com to find a dealer near you.
Back, you're listening to Ag PhD Radio on a Farmer Friday. Taking your calls and questions at 844-44-AG-PHD. And of course, you can email us radio@agphd.com. Just before the break, we were talking to Gordon in Michigan about tar spot a little bit, but we have a little fertility discussion to have here as well. Okay, Gordon, why don't you set the table? What do we want to talk about here with fertility?
Well, I have some, due to our manure applications, we have some soils and some fields that are quite high in phosphorus. I'll give you an example. We have one with a P1 test of about 200 pounds of phosphorus, and yet in these fields, our zinc levels aren't that high. And I think you folks recommend about like a 10-to-1 ratio of phosphorus to zinc, and this same field that I was referencing has about a 9.7 on zinc in pounds. So I think we would have to add another 10 pounds of zinc to get to that 10-to-1 ratio. And I was just wondering, is that too much to put on in 1 year? Would it be all right to go ahead and put that much on?
How heavy is your soil?
Our CECs probably are on the light side, you know, in your opinion, probably like a 9 to 10 in that area.
Yeah. Yep, that would be a little on the light side. So is it possible that you could put 10 pounds of zinc, actual zinc, out there, especially if you did it in a broadcast? Yeah, you absolutely could. Now, if you want to be more conservative than that, if you're worried about it at all, then just phase it in over, let's say, 2 or 3 years, something like that. But if you exceed what the crop is going to need, you're starting to work on that soil build program. And yeah, we do typically talk about somewhere around a 10-to-1 ratio. And if you got 200 pounds of phosphorus and only 10 pounds of zinc, then, you know, we're quite a bit outside that. The other way that we have checked this over the years, Gordon, is just looking at our yields and all our yield points based on what that ratio is. And so when we start getting that ratio out of whack, then our yield starts going down. And so that's one of the things you can take a look at too. So if it was me, I would probably look at putting on a fair amount of zinc across the whole farm. It doesn't cost much, especially like zinc sulfate. And then take just a few areas maybe and push it the whole way. So I might go, let's call it 2 or 3 pounds in a lot of areas, but I might go 10 pounds in a small amount of area, and then I would just see, okay, did that pay for itself? And in the future, then, does that tell me, hey, if I get something out of whack, I need to move it quickly? Usually for me, and yes, we do have a little heavier soil, but usually for me, I have just found we're ahead to just spend the money, invest the money now, because it's going to come back long term. And the great thing with zinc is it's not going anywhere. As long as your soil doesn't erode away, that zinc's going to stay there till it gets used up eventually. So it's a good long-term investment.
And zinc sulfate would probably be the most economical form to use.
Yep, that's the cheapest way to go when you talk about building soil. Now, there are a lot of liquid products that we talk about in terms of if a guy wants to put some on with a planter at a lower rate, if you want to do some foliar feeding, those are great ways to go to kind of feed the crop for right now. But when we talk about building the soil for the long term, then a broadcast application of dry zinc sulfate is by far the cheapest.
What would be the, would you have to use a chelated version in furrow? And if so, what would be the limit as how much you would feel safely you could apply?
So most farmers, most corn farmers in the Midwest will use a quart of zinc chelate. And yes, we do typically recommend a zinc chelate or some safe form of zinc there. But, you know, could you go 2 quarts? You probably could, but you just have to be careful about how much total salt is getting in that furrow. So let's put it this way. If the only thing you put in that furrow was 2 quarts of a zinc chelate, I'd feel pretty comfortable. But if you said, well, hey, I already have 5 gallons of 1034-0 out there and a quart of zinc chelate, can I bump it to 2? I'd say no way. No way. You're already okay. On the edge right. In terms of how much salt is in there.
So it sounds like we did use some zinc sulfate broadcast, and 1 quart in furrow, that'd probably be, you know, probably work out
yep.
pretty good. Then,
yes.
Probably.
Yep. I agree.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Hey, hey, thanks for calling in today, Gordon. Really appreciate it. And best of luck to you here this year.
Yep. Yep. You as well. Thank you.
You bet. Thank you.
Let's head over to Wisconsin. We've got Jim on with us right now with some soil test questions. Jim, how are you doing?
Doing good.
All right, so we got some soil test questions. Then, of course, white mold was a big issue up in Wisconsin. Have you got that all solved? Because Brian and I would love to learn the 100% solution for it because we don't have it.
No, I was hoping that was your guys' plan with solving it for me.
Well, planting corn has been our solution that works 100%, but outside of that, there's a whole bunch of steps that we use when it comes to white mold. One of them will actually be, we'll probably discuss when we get into the soil test discussion here, but we like to set the soil up right with the right fertility. We like to have good available levels of manganese, and we can really only do that if we can get our pH down to 6.5 or a little lower. So that would be one thing that may help. But we're also using some different microbiology to fight the battle for us, whether it's Contans or a product called Decomp has been really useful for us as well. And of course, in crop, using things like Cobra and some of the foliar fungicides has been a good idea too.
Okay. Yeah, there's been a couple guys around here that use Cobra and are happy. I think it's helped them a lot with white mold.
Yeah, so, yeah, I think so.
Yeah. So that's one of the issues. You mentioned manganese, and that's one of the issues I have on the soil test. I did a comparison with two different labs, and one lab comes back with about 9 parts per million, and the other one comes back with 91 parts per million. So it's a discrepancy that is kind of hard to
yes,
overlook
yes.
in a
but,
sense.
What do you mean, Jim? That sounds pretty close. 9 and 91.
It's only 10 times off. What the heck?
So here's my question for you. What kind of test was run for each one of them? Is one a DTPA and the other a Malic 3, or do you know?
I'm pretty sure that was part of the difference was the Malic 3. The one went through Kinsey's lab, so I'm pretty sure that was the Malic.
And that was a 91?
That was the 91.
Okay.
Yes.
And so what lab was it that had the 9?
The 9 was the Midwest.
Yeah, okay. So they're running a DTPA test. Let me guess on your pH. It's 7 or above?
No, it's not. It's
what
under
it?
7. It's
what
it's,
is it?
It's 6.8.
6.8 for
it's
pH?
6.8.
Hmm.
Yep.
How are your calcium levels? Do you have pretty high calcium?
That particular one, it has a lower calcium. It needs some more calcium. It's not particularly low. It's over 60, but with the magnesium being up in the 20s, I need to put some calcium on to kind of balance that out. So it's that particular field is the fertility is really good.
Yeah.
Kinsey came back with 900 pounds of phosphate on it, so it's a little over phosphated. So
Yep.
And that was, and the Midwest came back with about 100 parts per million on the phosphate. So,
well, I mean, yeah, those. Yeah, you got to, but 100 parts per million on the P. And so if we convert
right.
that, yep. yeah, if we convert that over, you got to multiply times 2 to get to pounds per acre. And then you got to multiply times 2.3 to get to phosphate.
Yep.
So you got 460
yep.
pounds of phosphate.
Right.
Okay. Yep. Yes. So anyway, yeah, either way, yes, you've got a fair amount of phosphate out there. But on this manganese deal, the biggest thing a lot of times is pH. So at a 6.8, you're pretty close to the 7 I was talking about. And where I'm going with this is, if let's say that pH was 5.8 instead, then the Midwest Labs test would show a way higher figure. A lot of times the DTPA shows us more of what's available right now, whereas the Malic 3 is showing us total of what's in the soil. And so we just get concerned when our pH starts creeping up near 7 and over 7 that manganese is going to be available. So that's what we would worry about a little bit. And so you could certainly put some more manganese out there if you'd like to. We've been using some manganese chelate with the planter. You can foliar feed it, whatever. But yes, having a little more manganese could probably help reduce that whole white mold thing.
Yeah, we're up against a break right now, Jim. Did you have more fertility questions, or did we get you taken care of there?
Well, yeah, I got time to call in some other time too. I mean, that's
well, you can sure.
I noticed your soybean photo in the Insider was my field. My field looks exactly like that, leaning.
Ooh, yeah, that's not good. Hey, tell you what, Jim, hang on through this break. We'd like to talk to you just a little bit more. Stay tuned. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio.
There's a new authority in town. New Authority Supreme Herbicide from FMC combines the best-in-class Group 14 PPO herbicide with the newest Group 15 herbicide for lasting residual control of water hemp, Palmer amaranth, kochia, pigweed, and other tough-resistant weeds. This exclusive liquid premix of single-application chemistries protects your soybeans from pre-plant to harvest. It also protects your bottom line. Authority Supreme Herbicide qualifies for the agronomic and economic incentives of the FMC Freedom Pass program. Rule your soybean fields with more authority than ever before with Authority Supreme Herbicide from FMC. More powerful preventative control isn't on the horizon, it's here. Visit your FMC retailer or fmccrop.com to learn more. Always read and follow all label directions, restrictions, and precautions for use. Authority Supreme Herbicide is not registered for sale or use in California. FMC and Authority are trademarks of FMC Corporation or an affiliate.
A pasture should have two things, grass and cattle. No weeds, no brush. That's why Chaparral Herbicide offers the broadest spectrum weed control available. It controls weeds other products can miss, like buckbrush and Canada thistle. And less weeds and brush in your pastures means more forage, so you spend less on feed. Chaparral also suppresses seed heads, lessening the effects of fescue toxicosis, all while providing season-long residual control. Visit noweedsnobrush.com today and learn more about Chaparral.
Build with the best. When you choose Morton Buildings for your next farm storage building, you'll experience the Morton advantage at every step, starting before the walls even go up. Since the value of our buildings is in its ability to protect what you have stored inside, we ensure that every component is researched and tested to withstand the elements in all weather conditions. And we back it up with the strongest warranty in the business. Looks better, built stronger, lasts longer. Learn more at MortonBuildings.com.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, marestail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall. Get a clean start for your next season with Valor herbicide brands. Always read and follow label directions.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds. Vellum is Rotam North America's mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Vellum. For more information, visit vellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
Welcome back to Ag PhD Radio. Brian Hefty here, along with my brother Darren, live in the Morton studio. This is a Farmer Friday. If you'd like to call into the show, we got just a little bit of time left. 844-44-AG-PHD. It's what Jim did from over in Wisconsin. Jim, sorry about that. We had to take a quick break there. What else did you have for fertility questions for us?
Well, I'm just wondering, after looking at them beans, I am short on copper as far as micronutrients.
Okay.
So copper sulfate is in the plan. Would also at this point be good to do some foliar feeding? Would help the process, because obviously that copper's not going to be available the first year to the degree that you need it.
Yeah, you certainly could do some foliar feeding. You also could use a blended micronutrient product in furrow. We do a lot of that on our own farm. So you got a couple different ways to handle that there. Now, I will say, if you do have any high pH spots and we start talking about, like, for example, iron deficiency chlorosis, so not a copper deal, but an iron thing. You know, we can green plants up, but a lot of times we've still lost yield. So where I'm going with this is, with the iron thing, just like with the copper, we look at, hey, we need to make sure we're on the early side. We talk all the time about let's never let that plant starve, and so be ahead of the game on the copper thing. So if you want to do some foliar feeding, all I'm getting at here is don't wait too long.
Okay. Yeah. In furrow would work.
Yep.
Probably be a good way to go.
Yep. You could do a little bit of that. Yep, absolutely. And keep in mind, too, copper is really important in terms of just overall disease, tolerance, I guess I would say, in any crop that there is out there. We want to have a good balance of micronutrients. I mean, it's kind of like when we talk about human health. If you go to your doctor, he's going to talk to you about some of these different micronutrients and, hey, take your vitamins and everything. Same thing with plants.
Yeah. Well, I was told that because there was dairy manure put on that field, that was why that field leaned like that. But all my fields leaned like that. So not all of them. And I didn't understand their reasoning behind that. It didn't make any sense to me. But then I saw your article in the Insider, and that kind of hit me. So I thought, that's probably the issue.
Well,
it could be the issue.
Yep. So I'll tell you what. If you want to send us your soil tests at any point, we'd be more than happy to take a look at those. Because, yeah, there are quite a few different things that could be going on. But just crops leaning in general, we talk all the time about potassium, manganese, and copper. Those are the three things in any crop when we talk about standability and reducing lodging, green snap, those kind of things.
Okay. Yep.
All right.
Yep. Thank you.
You bet. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
Yep.
All right, Brian, got an email from Jeremy, and he said,
Wait. Well, are we going to the Ag PhD mailbag?
It's okay. The mailbag.
All right.
I had to hear the mailbag music. All right, go ahead.
Got an email from Jeremy. He said, got a question on wheat. He said, I've been told by some of the older generation of my family there's nitrogen in the snow when it melts.
Yep.
And I've noticed this year on our wheat that it appears to green up after the snow melts. So
yep.
Is there actually some N in the wheat?
Sure.
The answer to that is yes. Generally thought to be 5 or 10 pounds of N in a late spring or an early fall type snow.
Well, hey, let's we got to talk about why. Just keep in mind, the air is like 78% nitrogen. It's only around 21% oxygen. So we talk all the time about air being oxygen. Air is really nitrogen. So whenever we can capture any of that nitrogen that's in the air with something like snow or possibly rain or lightning, that's great.
All right. And part of it is that atmospheric N is in the NH2 form. So as that comes down in the snow, well, it's going to melt and it'll move right into the ground in a lot of cases. The challenge is it's also going to come down in heavy rains, but often just runs off because it's coming so fast that it doesn't have time to soak in. And then also you mentioned lightning, and lightning does have some nitrogen too, but it's not really anything that I've ever seen anybody measure. I'm sure there probably is a measurement somewhere, but it just hits small areas, so it's not a big widespread thing like, say, you get a 6-inch snowfall in the spring across a field. Well, that could be significant and relatively even across the field. And Jeremy is from Southeast Illinois. Jeremy, thanks for the questions. We really appreciate that. Got another wheat feedback here, Brian. and barley. Got one from Melvin here. He said, I'm in South Central Montana. I'm at 5,200 foot elevation. I read your magazine and you talk a lot about corn and soybeans, but I'm not growing either of those. I do appreciate the education, but I'd love to hear more about wheat. Barley, peas, lentils, canolas. We're trying to survive here on 12 inches of water, and crops just haven't had the breeding like corn and soybeans have that we're growing here. And also, he said to mention your corn chips. They're a lot better with our liquid malt barley. Hey, I appreciate the feedback, Melvin, and we'll try to get some more articles in on some of those other crops. We do from time to time. There's no question about that. But
And a lot of these things pertain to all crops. So like the fertility discussions we've had today, like the drainage questions. I mean, there are a lot of things that every crop has to have. And so we may be talking about that with corn and soybeans, but it absolutely applies to all those other crops.
Or a fungicide discussion, something like that. And you can certainly look at a lot of those same active ingredients and products for different...
You can. It's just we'd need to get a little more specific. And we often do with wheat. We spend a fair amount of time in our magazine, on TV, on the radio, talking about wheat. Just not so much on barley, peas, lentils, canola. And quite frankly, it just really comes down to an acreage discussion a lot of times, that there are fewer acres there. So we spend more of our time on some of the bigger acre crops. But yes, we absolutely can talk a little more about that.
All right. Got a question from Aaron in Kansas. He said, I prepaid most of my ag chemical needs last week for tax reasons. Now my retailer says that he's holding his December prices through this first week of January. So I'm trying to think of what odds and ends I might use this summer to try to get those for the lowest price too. I'm just kind of curious what you do on your farm other than fungicide and insecticide. Are there other things I should be thinking about prepaying for?
Sure. And it can be even some of the little stuff. You think about spray adjuvants, spraying our pastures, spraying our ditches. We use a lot of biologicals or naturals. And even if you aren't used to using those, you might want to start experimenting with some of those things. We also typically will try to prepay and plan for the worst so we get the best price on things. And you know, you can talk to your retailer too, but there are some out there who will literally give you interest on your money or give you an extra discount if you prepay too much and you need to get that money back. So that's something you could check on. But anyway, all I'm getting at here is the prices in season are always higher than they are at this time of year. Not on every single item at the same percentage, but they are always higher for two reasons. One, interest. All the big companies have incentives for retailers to pay early. So then they basically pass that savings on to farmers. And the other reason is fill programs. Most of the big companies will have fill programs that, let's say a retailer has room to bring in half his needs of whatever herbicide it is. Okay, so on that first half of herbicide, they might get a 5% discount, might even be 10%. So usually the retailer isn't keeping that. He's passing that on. And so when they run out of that, then they have to raise their price. So that's part of the reason why you're going to see these prices typically be in the range of 6 to 12% higher in season than what they're going to be right now. So that's why usually like on our farm, we're trying to prepay as much as we can as early as possible and plan out as much as we can. And your plan's going to change. That's not the point. The point is just simply, hey, we've gone through this exercise of trying to figure out roughly what we think we're going to need. And we also look back at the last couple of years and all the other little things that we did. So I just have been doing that here over the last couple of weeks as we got near our year end on our farm. And I go, oh, yeah, I forgot about that. Oh, yeah, we did have that problem in that one field and we had to address that. And so there are a lot of those kind of things. And then the other thing when it comes to like the fertility side, we were talking about today is really analyze your soil tests and see, okay, what do I need to improve on? Where is my money best spent? So just it's so important to take some of these bad weather days that we have in the wintertime, like where we're at. We'll get a blizzard several times during the winter. Okay, you can't do much outside, but you can certainly be planning for the coming year and what else you can improve on. And yeah, right now, it's still prepay time. A lot of retailers are still honoring their December prices, so you want to make sure you take advantage of that.
Always fun on a Farmer Friday to get to talk to farmers from all over. Really appreciate everyone who called in on today's program. Thanks to everybody also who sent in emails. There's a few other emails we didn't have time to get to today. We'll try to get to those next week. Thanks for listening to our show today. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio. Now stay tuned for Rob Sharkey and Shark Farmer Radio.